Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. It's the Tony Perkins Show, featuring Gary Stein. No, they're not related. They're just good friends. It's Tony and Gary.
Just good friends, or are we? Or we pretend to be.
I don't know about the we part, but I am.
No, we're just good friends.
No.
I shouldn't say just. I don't want to put the word just in front of it.
No.
We are good friends.
Well, I don't know what they're expecting us to be. We're really, really, really close friends. That's
yes,
it.
We are.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. It is episode number 14, believe it or not. We're getting up there, man.
We're going to do thousands of shows.
Yes, we are. That is our intention.
Not today, though.
No, not today.
Yes, no. Yes, Rob Spiewak.
I'm going to have to phone home.
Honey, going to be later. Welcome to the show. I'm Tony.
I'm Gary.
We are joined, as always, for the last several weeks, by Mr. Rob Spiewak.
Hi, guys. Good to have you here.
With us
to
today.
Love to have you here, buddy boy.
On loan, as I like to say, from the Michael Mara Show. And running the board for the first time ever, Rob Ford Jr.
Yeah. Hello, gentlemen.
You know what? It is very rewarding to see my son graduate. I'm so proud of you. I want to know why you're not running the board with a cap and gown on. Actually, I've seen you in a gown, and that's not that good. That is not that
good.
That's
right.
It gets better.
But if I may have one serious moment, and don't hold me to it, because I never want to be quoted on that, I'm really proud of you. I'm really glad you're doing this. It doesn't mean that I want to lose Rob or Oscar from the board, but to see somebody kind of graduate and move up the chain here, and you are the greatest. You know we love you.
Well, thank
and,
you.
And I'm really happy for you.
Thanks. I appreciate that a lot.
I didn't
thank
buy
you very
a
much.
Single word of that.
Really? The funny thing is, I didn't mean it.
Acting.
Yeah. Rob,
acting
Rob
101.
Ford, Rob Ford Jr. has been with us since episode one, and you've done a bunch of the shows on the Moore Network. You've
oh,
been
yeah.
with Michael yeah. Mara Show yep. and all of that, yeah. And, you know, it's a crucial part of the show. Every week, just, you know, some of the inside information, Gary and I come up with the various things we want to do, and we need this sound element and that, and Rob pulls it all together, makes suggestions, has everything ready for us. So it's been an integral part of the show. And then today, the running of the board during the actual doing of the show.
And that's in yes. Pamplona, Spain, right?
The
running of the board?
Yes, that's right.
Do you know I just was going to go there?
I was about, to go there, too.
That's very frightening. If our heads are working together like Ray Milland and Rosie Greer.
Ray Milland and Rosie Greer. Oh my God. Have we mentioned that show on this show
yes,
before?
Yes, we did.
Because I know you and I talk about it.
Yes.
I think we discussed it at dinner.
At dinner.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I think,
what
I think we did.
On the show?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the name of the movie?
The Man with Two Heads.
The Man with Two Heads.
And
oh my
you know,
God.
It was not really the zenith of either of their careers.
Oh, no.
You know, no, Rosie.
Really?
Rosie wasn't really known for his acting career before
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But Ray Milland, he had been in big what? Movies from the 30s. And
why would he do that movie?
I think maybe
the coffers money, might have been
money.
A little light.
Yeah. I mean, he must have needed money. You
what,
know?
What year was that movie, roughly speaking?
Oh, who cares?
Well, it's the 60s, right?
It was
because it was making a point
yeah.
about racism.
It was, you know, it might not have been the zenith for either of their careers, but it was the apex of plastic heads in movies.
It was.
It was really, they advanced the industry huge.
You know, when you think that Ray Milland was the star of The Lost Weekend.
Yes.
Yeah.
An Academy Award winning movie.
Yeah.
And he does
and
the man.
Fantastic.
With two heads stuck next to Rosie Greer. They're not playing football. You know, they're, I mean, that is, we,
this
that's
must,
the most bizarre film
it
ever.
It is a bizarre movie.
How about being at that pitch meeting?
Yeah, exactly. Who's the one that said, let's do it?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I can only, and again, I think it's 60s. You know what? We have Rob on the board now,
yeah.
so he can't be on the computer.
Rob is the guy always
Well, actually, I know the answer. The pitch meeting that Gary was referring to, it wasn't actually when they gave them the idea. It was actually when they were putting the head on. They actually reached into a big bucket of pitch and, you know, they had to scoop it on and get it on their dip and tight.
What kind of pitch are we going to do? You know what? Now that I think about the movie, I'm going to try to find it because I would love to show it to Connor. Because with, you know, our kids.
What has he ever done to you?
because
Tony's 11-year-old son.
My 11-year-old son. He won't believe how bad the special effects and everything are in this movie. We've come such a long way.
Yeah.
This was a movie that actually came out in movie theaters.
What's the old joke about, I can't believe that you looked at yourself today and just said, okay.
Right.
We're going to put that on the screen.
Right. Yeah.
And
right.
It was acceptable to
that's
them.
That's right, wow. Yeah. If you've never seen it, it's Ray Milland, it's Rosie Grier,
yes.
Who made a couple of movies here and there, I think. Was best known for being a football player.
Mm-hmm. And knitting.
And knitting, yeah, that was his big thing. He was the gentle giant because he was a beast on the field.
Right.
But his favorite thing was knitting. And then, I don't know if you remember this, he was one of RFK's bodyguards.
That's right.
Yes, he was with Robert F. Kennedy.
Did a great job. Mm.
Too soon.
What kind of
was a bigger misstep, the bodyguarding or the movie?
Oh my god!
You know what I want to find out about?
What's that?
Who was the very next important person to hire him as a bodyguard?
You know, his resume is still out there. You can get him for a song.
Yeah, that would be. Do you put that on your resume?
Does it sound as...
Where have you done security before? Well, the Kennedy campaign.
Yeah. Yep. Rob Spiewak has lost it.
Go on without me.
Which was the worst misstep?
Yeah.
The movie.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I think after that, I think he was the bodyguard for Governor George Wallace.
No. Stop digging.
Can you imagine?
Still alive, right? Rosie Grier's still alive.
Yes, he is.
Okay, good.
And he's, I think he had some issues after the Robert Kennedy assassination, as you know, and
he hadn't spent much time at the range.
I wonder if he. Never mind. I'm
okay.
Not gonna
all right, look, Rob, can you get him on the phone?
No. Oh, yeah.
Just dial him up.
You know what I want to say to him? What happened there? What happened?
Wow. Next week on the Tony Perkins Show featuring Gary Stein, we've booked Ray Milland's head.
Right.
The fake one.
Yeah, the fake one. Exactly.
I want to encourage you to please like or love the Tony Perkins Show on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter.
Yes.
At T-Perk Show on Twitter. Also, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching More Broadcasting and then clicking on the Tony Perkins Show.
5-star reviews, always appreciated. Just
yes.
Like the reviews for The Man with Two Heads.
If you've never seen that movie, check it out. It's a terrible movie, but you just won't believe how bad it is and how bad the attempt was to have the two heads on top of the body and the heavy-handed attempt to make a statement about bigotry and where we are today.
Not a lot of good points to this picture.
No.
And we've given it more time than anybody has in the last 50 years.
Exactly. Absolutely right. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely right. I got to tell you, I love coming to do the show. This is it's a joy to do.
But what's your problem?
Well, no problem. But for
you guys
the first
have switched
time,
roles.
Yeah, we have kind of. For the first time ever, I'm a little exhausted, really, coming to do the show. This has been, and Gary, you know this because we've talked several times this week. It's been a very, very busy week for both of us doing a variety of things. This week, two nights ago, and I still haven't quite recovered from this, we did a promo shoot for Channel 5. I'm on Fox 5.
You still work in there?
I still work there,
how
yeah.
How about that?
The 5 p.m. and the 10 p.m. shows. We did a promo shoot for the 10 o'clock show.
But the exhausted thing surprises me. What, were they doing the photo shoot on a bicycle? Were you on a bike during the shoot? Because, or were you, did they make you run? Because I had a very busy week, too. It probably was similar to doing a promo shoot, and I feel fine.
Yeah, right. Well, you probably have gotten more sleep than here's the thing.
I don't sleep.
This promo shoot went until midnight. It went until we finished at 12 o'clock.
So did you get the day off from being on TV that day? How do they do that?
Here's the weird thing. For the purposes of this particular, and a promo is, if you don't know, it's a commercial for the show.
Right, advertising. advertisement for the show.
Right. And so for this particular one.
Oh, you probably had to change clothes and stuff.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Here's the cool thing. Shawn Yancey, she's my co-anchor on the 10 o'clock show.
She's great.
Yes, she is. They gave us the night off so that because we're on the nighttime show, they wanted the shoot to be at night.
Okay.
Right?
So makes sense.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And, so you know, she doesn't do a podcast, so today she's probably still home sleeping.
Getting rest. That's right. But because it was, so we had the night off. They gave us the night off from the show. This doesn't happen that often. Usually you squeeze a shoot in around whatever your work schedule is. But because the mandate was, we want to shoot you around in various venues around town, outside, you got to be off the show. So I was off the show. I still went to work my normal time. I get to work about 3 o'clock.
Right.
We had
in the afternoon.
In the afternoon, right. Yeah, the opposite. What? You're saying I go
nothing,
in?
Look, I'm holding myself back. Just tell your story. Choose your spots.
It's still work. Yeah, choose your spots. Yeah. It's still work.
Yeah, right.
I have your standard.
You have an iron lung at home?
No. It's still work. Yes. So I got to work at 3.
Yes.
This was cool. We had professional makeup, which we don't usually do.
So in the promo, do you have two heads?
we're not making it easy for him.
Actually, that could be a good idea.
I like that.
It could be a theme. That would be funny to have the promos be based on old movies.
Yeah.
Did you get really tired when they put the makeup on?
Oh, that's a theme here, right?
Yeah. No, let me. Can I ask a genuine question?
Yes.
Because TV has
they've been ingenuous.
Up to now, all 14 episodes. TV has always been so elusive to me. I studied some television in college, but I always wanted to do radio. You say professional makeup. What makeup do you do? And if I'm being too personal,
tell me
to shut up.
No.
What kind of makeup regimen do you go through before you do the news on television? Because you know you got your high def, and you got to look your best.
We understand your question, Rob.
Yes, absolutely. Here's the deal. When I worked at the network. at Good Morning America,
right?
You know, obviously that's a big deal. You have hair and makeup. You go in before the show, and there are people who do that for you. They make sure you look your absolute best. At the local level, unfortunately, they don't really spring for that. So we all do our own makeup.
Okay.
I went to Max, is that? Yeah, I do.
Max Factor?
No, not Max Factor.
No, he did Lucy.
No.
You've missed it by a few years.
What do I do?
Is it Mac Cosmetics?
Mac, thank you.
Mrs. Spiewak wears Mac.
Yeah, how do you?
Trowels it on.
Does she really?
No, not really. That is what she uses, and I know because if you have 5 empty MAC cases, you can turn them in for a lipstick.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, you can. There you go.
I would never need that. Yeah. But I would. So I went to MAC and I said, "Listen, I'm on TV."
Is that what you said?
No. I felt that I needed to say why I'm asking about makeup.
Sure.
So I said, "I'm on TV." And they said, "Sure, buddy. whatever floats your boat."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
here's your lipstick.
Also, I'm an astronaut, and I'll be going to the moon next week.
So I asked them, what do I need? What do I use? They helped me figure it out.
Okay.
And I'm very simple. I have a compact of, it's the concealer, I guess is what it's
called.
What's
the rouge you're wearing now?
I'm not wearing any rouge. I don't even know the terms. There's a foundation. That's what it is. Foundation that I put on to even my skin out.
Right.
And then it's a blot powder because I tend to get shiny. So that's all I use. There is high definition makeup, and we went high def a few years ago. You know what? It's expensive. It's more involved. And I just decided I'm not going to do that. If someone says to me, you know, you still look low def.
Right. I mean, you're not wearing enough makeup that you're actually appearing blurry. I want you to know that. The capture is very accurate.
The capture is good, right? Because you watch high def.
I do. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm 5 inches from the screen. I'm staring.
And now with the stories of the day, low def Perkins.
Sounds like a rapper.
The point of the story. Very good. Very good.
Hey, low def. You are never going to get this story out.
The point of the story is not that I wear makeup. Anyway, when it. Put makeup
what
on.
What is the point?
We got in a car. We drove down to the W Hotel.
Was Here's it a compact plug. Car?
Can you give them a ding, please?
Of course,
it a compact car? Very clever. That is the loudest ding I've ever heard.
Well, we meant it.
We went to the W Hotel, went to the roof. They have a bar there called the POV Lounge or something like that. Man, it is beautiful. Spectacular views of the city. Washington Monument behind us, White House on the other side. And so that's where we shot. Sean and I in the foreground, the monument behind us with the sun setting. It was beautiful.
So that's the building that has the restaurant on the roof.
Who knew? No, but you know, that is a hip, that is a very hip hotel. They would not let me stay there.
You're right.
Because it's too hip.
That says something.
And when you get to the roof, then it's even hipper.
Yeah,
yes,
sure.
It is.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd never been.
And I'm sure that the view is spectacular.
It really is. And they just redid it, and this is one of the hip places in town. In fact, when I got there, I felt like, God, I gotta get out more. I gotta do things more. Because it's absolutely fantastic. So anyway, we shoot there, and it takes 2 hours, 2.5 hours for when you see these promos. The reason I'm mentioning this is you're going to start to see them on the air for November sweep, so in a week or so.
Okay.
We have no lines. It's just attitude. It's us standing there.
You got tude.
I had some tude.
Like a supermodel?
Except you pull it back a little bit. Yeah. He didn't want supermodel.
Pussycat, give me lion, give me lion.
So it's all about the look that we have. Sometimes we would smile, sometimes we would look serious, but literally sometimes the moves we would do would be rock forward a little bit. He would tell me, it's my brother. My brother is our creative services director at Channel 5, believe it or not.
I did not know this.
Yeah. So he would tell me, okay, shift to your right foot. And he would say to Sean, step back a little bit. And it would just be that little bit of movement. That's all they were looking for. Can you believe that?
I almost don't want to ask this question because I get so much grief from Mike and Oscar about being a super fanboy. But my father and I have discussed you in promos before.
It's really sad.
It really is. As we sit 5 inches away from our high def television. And my father's I believe my dad's quote was, look at Tony. He doesn't want to be there. Is it tough after a couple hours of pivoting on your foot to muster up the smile or the attitude? What's it like when you're shooting? Because I would think after a while it would almost be awkward.
That's a good question. For most talent, I feel that they get tired of it and they don't enjoy it. I actually enjoy it. I don't mind it. We're laughing a lot during the process. We're joking around. Did you ever go on the shoots when we did for Good Morning America?
Sure. For everything, it's a necessary part of the process.
Yeah, yeah. But most people hate it.
Right.
Most people hate it.
Right.
I don't mind it. I actually don't mind it. It is a long night. Like I said, we went to one location, then we went to National Harbor. That's in Maryland. It's a new area here in D.C. where they have the big Ferris wheel called the Capitol Wheel.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
So we shot over there, again, because the background was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But again, it's set up, shoot, break down.
Move on. Did Scott pick all the locations?
He picked the locations.
So he scouted everything
and picked it.
Yeah, it's a great job, to do that.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. But it's a lot of work.
Yes.
And, what the funny thing is, we spent eight and a half hours doing this, and you'll see the promos over and over, but the portion that you'll see of Sean and I will maybe be 8 seconds or something like that.
Right. Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
That's the downside to the promos is that you're shooting and shooting and shooting and they're taking the best of it. It's really like, I don't know if you've ever done, have you done a commercial?
No, I don't think I have.
Because you will work for 2 straight days on a commercial and maybe have 10 seconds on air.
Yeah. I know you had a failed acting career in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Nice of you to bring it up.
Yeah. Well, I think it coincided with you doing stand-up.
Oh! Wow. Did you do commercials? Did you ever do a commercial?
I never got one. You know what somebody said on a commercial audition once? A couple of times I got, you're not leading man type.
Okay.
Mm. You're not a character-y enough performer. Somebody said, you're not really geeky enough.
Well, that's high praise.
And I thought, you're not geeky enough implies that you're somewhat geeky. And I thought, no, I really heard the whole thing. It's like, believe me, that was not high praise. That was, you're geeky.
Right.
And we'd like it if you were geekier.
So, but you're not even good at being a geek.
No, no. Now, my wife did commercials.
She did.
She did many.
She's done some even relatively recently.
Yeah, she did a Verizon commercial maybe a year ago, and they shot it at our house, actually. They liked the location, so we got a location fee, which was very nice.
Oh.
But it took them 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And she's probably on the commercial all of 8 seconds.
Yeah. It takes a long this shoot because we had an outside production company. They were shooting with a digital, you know, fancy camera and all that kind of stuff. It's going to look beautiful, very cinematic. And it's like when you make a movie, and you always hear the movie stars talk about this. You know, where you sit around waiting for most of the time, and then you shoot. It's 20 seconds or whatever. Break down. Now let's go do the next thing.
I love the fact, and you know, Channel 5 is the best in this city of being a part of the city. And
yes.
And they are involved, and I really do feel they are our hometown station.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I love the fact that your promos are actually putting you in real life situations in our city.
I have to say, I wish that, I mean, I like what we shot, and the promos are going to be really cool. We almost could have shot second promos if we'd had a separate camera shooting the promos, because people kept walking up to us. Oh, I watch you all the time.
Oh, that's cool.
That would be fun. Yeah. That would be fun.
And it would. This was interesting because I, you know,
tell Scott.
I'm very fortunate. I get a lot of attention, but going out with Sean, who is gorgeous, mm-hmm. and of course we were dressed to the nines that night.
That's nice. You know, before
Tony
we started,
has placed his hands in a certain position.
to signify.
Signify something.
Hair color.
That Sean is gorgeous.
She has arthritis.
In a very unusual place to get arthritis.
I'm just going to say that we discussed, do we use the cameras for this podcast? No, we don't. And there's a reason.
Although we will at some point.
Yeah.
But man, people were walking right past me like, oh, you're beautiful. I was making jokes about it because they would say, you're even more beautiful in person, Sean. Gorgeous, gorgeous. And then as they'd be walking away, I would say, am I?
Yeah,
okay,
I'm here.
Looking?
I'm here. Hi.
And I'm good looking too? And they would just keep walking.
I think it speaks to the makeup.
We got to show pictures of Sean because people who don't live in this area should know what she looks like.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And
she's also right.
She's also terrific, by the way. Let's not get caught up in looks. She's really very, very good at what she does.
Oh, she's fantastic. Yeah. I love, you know, I'm working with Sean. I've been doing it only a year now because I was on the mornings forever working with that team and then came to the night show where Sean was already established. And, you know, I'm sure for her it was kind of like, oh boy, now I got to, you know, break in somebody new or something.
Right.
Not that I was new to the station, but new to that show. And it's worked great. And she is great. And she will appreciate you saying that.
Well, you know, I was going to say, you know what's really going to help you with your relationship with Sean? She will hate you less for not being on the podcast, since we're at least talking about her, and we'll put up a picture of what she looks like.
We will. Sean Yancey is her name.
Yes.
You can follow her on Twitter at Fox5Sean. You can do that.
Oh,
anyway,
cool.
That's why I'm tired, because we had a late night and, you know, all the other things that go on.
Do you think you'll be able to make it through the whole show today?
I think,
would you like to take a little nap?
Could I?
Well,
you know what?
We have a blanket.
Are you about to do something on the show?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take a nap.
Yeah, all right, go ahead.
He's going to power down like a droid.
Exactly. Yeah, I was looking to save this episode now.
Wow. I don't even tell stories that often. That's the grief.
No,
I get.
You know what? That was a good story, though.
Yeah.
I loved him at the makeup counter.
People don't really know what goes on behind the scenes of doing this stuff if they're not involved, and it really is very involving. It really is.
It is. There's a lot more to it than just sitting down at the desk and reading.
It really is like shooting an entire show.
Yes,
doing
it is.
Promos and with many, many locations.
Yeah, and it's very cool. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
You're right. You touch on something, Rob. Most talent, people on the air called, are like, all right, enough already. Let's go.
Especially at GMA, when people were up since 4 in the morning. I don't remember Charlie and Diane and Robin liking it very much.
And I liked it, you know, because I was making jokes and stuff. Yeah. I like making people laugh. But, you know.
At GMA, the promos would shoot after you wrapped the show for the day. They were spent.
And I mean,
But it could even be at night, though, because they wouldn't necessarily just do them right after the show. They would get people together again later in the day.
Ooh. Yeah. And those are the big promos. You do your daily promos that are kind of topical, but then you'd have your campaigns where we'd go out. There was a studio out in Queens. where we would go.
Astoria Studios.
Astoria Studios, yeah. That's right.
Silver Cup.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And we would, you know, it would be catered and all that kind of stuff. And it was pretty cool. That,
I was never invited to the catered ones.
Well, we asked you to cater them, and you
I didn't
want
to put on the bow tie.
Right?
which is something I'm going to talk about later in the show today.
Oh, yes, that's right.
It's true.
That's right.
It leads into that. But you know what we were going to talk about today, other than promos? this is a total detour.
Okay.
We were going to talk about the fact that I think that a lot of what's on television right now is the death of civilization. And I'm not really as talking as much about the scripted shows as I am about reality TV. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we've harped on it a lot on the show, but I have walked away from a career in reality television. I walked off a very high-profile talk show and said, I'll never do this again because this is horrible and it doesn't add to the greater good of anything. And it's sort of in the Jerry Springer world of shock television. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that reality TV has been in a worse place than it is right this minute.
We haven't talked about this a lot, and I don't want to force a detour, but I just do want to establish that, Gary, and we have said this, Gary was a longtime TV producer. You've heard that with some of the guests that we've had on the show that Gary has worked with before. And during, not super recently, not during the last year or so, but for a few years there, after you left Good Morning America, we at Parted Company, professionally, you were developing shows,
yes,
pitching shows, and you were the shows that people wanted to hear, the pitches were just for reality, quote unquote, garbage kind of shows.
Well, I'm glad you reminded me of that because I told you that I actually had a kind of epiphany. Mm-hmm. And I was so busy and working. Sometimes I was vice president of development for a production company, a couple of times for networks. And it was always my job to go out there and pitch shows, but I had to know what every network was looking for. Mm-hmm. And I was so busy trying to create shows or listen to writers who were bringing us shows. And then I would bring them and present them to networks and realize that I don't think in the last couple of years I've presented a single show that I would ever watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself depressed at work all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And then finally, I told myself what I think this is about. I don't like this. I'm a dinosaur. My TV is long gone, except I love what's happening in scripted television now and that there's a lot of good stuff.
Sure.
There are a couple of good shows out there. There's some things, you know, because of my friendship with Tom Bergeron, I have to be able to say that I love Dancing with the Stars.
Sure. Everybody does.
Kind of.
But you don't like but you don't like the trashy kind of forced.
Yes. And I just thought, wouldn't it be fun if we talk about a couple of the shows out there that really exemplify.
Such as
how about Toddlers and Tiaras?
Oh, this is no.
I mean, what we're doing is we're finding children to be in a position where they are supposed to be sexy before kindergarten.
Yeah.
Right.
And and the only reason they have commercial breaks on this show is so that they can change their diapers. on one episode of Toddlers and Tiaras, they had a girl dress up in the Julia Roberts costume from Pretty Woman, which was the hooker outfit.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, my goodness.
Obviously a smaller version of that
costume. I
was
going to say, wouldn't that be too big for...
Right. They cut it down. They put it on three of the girls. So you have to ask yourself, it's not about the kids. What's wrong with these parents? And really, look, there are obviously viewers for the shows that Tony and I are about to talk about.
Yeah.
I don't know who's watching, but I certainly know who's no longer making any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. True enough.
Right.
I think people, you know what? I don't know why people watch some of these shows. I think maybe there are a number. I think part of it is a fascination with because most of them are about a particular world.
Yes.
That's the world of pageants and little kids.
Yes.
There's hoarders. The world of people who hoard stuff in their houses.
Right.
And it's kind of
storage wars.
And there's American pickers who actually, you know, prey on the hoarders.
Yeah. Right.
It's sort of a relationship.
There's Duck Dynasty. If I wanted to watch Duck Dynasty, I would rent Deliverance.
You know what? They could reissue Deliverance and say the original Duck Dynasty.
They could.
And I know that I know a lot of our listeners out there probably like Duck Dynasty and Pawn Stars and all that. I just can't stand it. I realized I need to leave this aspect of television.
My wife is addicted to judge shows. And we've discussed this on the Mike O'Mara show many times, but she will, if she has an afternoon off, she will sit down and she will watch, I don't know who's on anymore, but Judge Joe Brown and Judge Alex and all of them. And I asked her, I said, why, Carrie, you're better than this. Why are you watching these judge shows? And she says, because it underscores, I'm better than all these people that
that's
are fighting over
it.
And I think that's a big part of it.
I think it is, too. Yep. There's a vicarious thing there where you can feel superior to people who are on a lot of these competition shows and shows about unfortunate people. And I also think that that is another reason why it's horrible.
Can I say thank you to Carrie? Because on Fox 5 in the afternoon, we've got like 73 judge shows.
Yeah, you do.
it is amazing the number of judge shows that are on. And just my little thing about the judge shows. All right. I do the 5 p.m. news, so we come up to the studio about 4:45, and Judge Judy is on.
Yes.
So when I put in my earpiece as we're getting ready, and I'm listening to Judge Judy as I'm proofreading the last couple of scripts and getting set up and all that kind of stuff, I have turned into, I used to see my grandmother, my dearly departed grandmother, she would talk to the TV, and it was very cute. She would like watching her stories.
Guilty! Yeah. Guilty!
Her stories, the sitcoms, or the judge shows, and all. I have become that. I'm sitting at the anchor desk, and I'm proofreading, but I'm hearing Judge Judy, and I'm going, shut up! She's telling you shut up and listen. Just listen.
That's why you're here in the first place.
Right, that's right.
And that's how you got into this mess.
And I'm not making this up. It goes on every afternoon. Laura Evans, my co-anchor at 5, will sit down, and she just starts laughing. I'm like, and I get so frustrated because the... I almost said contestants.
I think you're probably pretty close.
It's all written, you know. Yeah,
litigants. Yeah.
Well, it's not all written, but it is all set up. They're actual cases, like they say. But you know how they do this? If you freeze frame and read the fine print on some of these judge shows, and I think Judge Judy, I might have some of the figures wrong, but the parties they get paid for being on
the show. They do.
And I think
no one loses.
It's like $5,000.
There's a limit on the claims.
Right. There's a limit on the claims because what actually is happening, let's say you've got a lawsuit because this guy backed into my boat and it's ruined and now I can't, you know, so he should pay for it. Oh, but it was parked in my driveway, blah, blah, blah. Okay. They cut through it. Judge Judy decides, ruling in favor of the plaintiff, $3,000. What happens is you, Gary, let's say it's you and I, you come to the show, you're getting $5,000, so am I. They take $3,000 from your money and give it to me.
Yes.
So I leave the show with $8,000, you leave with $2,000.
That's right.
Everybody
makes out.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Look, let me tell you something. When I was an actor in my failed career,
it wasn't
I
failed.
Was either on People's Court or Divorce Court.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a
classic People's Court? Was it Wapner?
Gotta be Wapner.
Yeah.
That was a very bad
That's
rain,
cool.
Man.
No, but you know what? People's Court was so early on, I watched People's Court.
Yeah, well, it was
because
unique.
It was novel at the
so
time.
So was the original Divorce Court.
Yeah. Right. But what I was going to say to you is that they delivered a script to my house.
What?
Really?
And I learned my lines.
Really? Were you a plaintiff or one of the defendants?
Yeah, I was a defendant or a plaintiff or whatever. And, you know, we had my buddy Sam on a recent show.
Yeah.
Sam made some money being on a couple of those things a few times, and I remember running lines with him for one of the shows, and I don't
really?
Care if I'm giving away trade secrets, because you know how I feel about the business now.
I tell you what shows bother me. 16 and Pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Teen Mom.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Now, I don't watch these shows. I'm aware of them because these little girls, well, not little girls, they're like 16, 17, 18, and the show ostensibly is about, wow, look what happens to your life when you're young and you have a baby. But at the same time, they're kind of glamorizing it. I know that they say, no, 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 we're showing the realities of hardship. No, they're not.
Tony, they are not kind of doing that. They are doing that. This is selling television, and that's what it's all about. That's part of my problem.
Yeah.
We are capitalizing on your misfortune, but we're telling you something completely different. We're saying, here's an outlet for you.
Yeah.
We're going to get you help, but we really hope that your problem is worse than anybody else's.
And some of these girls have become mini celebrities.
They really are. When I was at WVU, there's a big downtown on High Street. There's a big club district. All the clubs everybody goes there on the weekends. There was word around town that one of the Teen Mom or 16 and Pregnant girls was doing an appearance at one of the clubs in the college town.
An appearance.
And her PR department did not check if it was an 18 or a 21 bar. They booked her for a 21 bar, and the bouncer wouldn't let her in.
Oh my goodness.
And the thing is that even if they are giving them help or helping them through a situation that is, by all rights, unfortunate for them, they're glamorizing it in the fact that they're making them famous.
That's right. And that is rewarding the behavior.
Next time you're in the grocery store, look at the magazines on the rack. I guarantee you one of these teen moms, if not more, will be on one of these magazine covers.
Right.
They write about one of them. Hasn't one become a porn star?
Yes.
One is a porn star.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Farrah somebody.
Don't look at me. I don't look at porn.
I know Gary doesn't look at porn, so I looked at both of the Robs.
I'm just going to whistle and kick dirt.
Why'd you say it like that?
Now, if she was in Popular Science, then
that's
the magazine for me.
Has that affected your dating at all? All right. How about this? How about this? Dating naked.
There's a host of naked shows.
Yes.
Right.
So here's what I don't get about dating naked. For one thing, we are not a pretty nation.
No, we're not.
And they are carefully casting, but they are making sure that they have a few real people.
Of course.
And then they've got people that you would want to see naked, but guess what? They can't show that because it's television, mm-hmm. so everything is pixelated.
You have hit on, so, yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we are getting excited about the fact that we're almost looking at naked people.
I can actually see this pitch. I can see the whole process. Hey, I got an idea. What's your idea? Dating naked. The people, you know, you're always working towards getting naked. They start out naked. They're nude on the show. Love it. Oh, people are going to talk about it. It's going to get eyeballs. Let's do it. Then they shoot it, and it's an edit, and they go, we can't show this.
Right.
And they have to pixelate it to such an extent that you see nothing, no outline, no hair, should there be hair.
Right.
No nipples.
But here's how smart they were. And this is not a dirty word, so don't you dare cut it out.
Of course not.
They know that it's titillating. They know that even though...
Shock jock.
I see what you did there.
You see what I did there?
Yes.
They know that even though they can't show you anything,
right.
they are letting you... sort of imagine
right.
that you are, and you're enjoying that.
And there is a certain segment of the population that would say in the old days that when you show less, it's more.
That's right. Right.
You know, and they're implying stuff, but not when it's digitally pixelated.
No, this is not a Hitchcock movie with a train going
into a tunnel.
That's right.
This is something much darker.
Yeah.
That's right.
I will confess this. A couple of nights ago, I was
were naked?
That too.
And pixelated.
That's right. Sometimes I wake up that way. Oh my God, what has happened?
How do I go to work?
Put on the makeup.
I can't get my pants on. I was watching Naked and Afraid.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
And I have to say it was rather fascinating. The nudity really is not the point, except that there's no way I would want to be out in the brush. Well, I mean, these people are like, they've been deposited in Madagascar
right.
and places like that. They're naked, except for, you know, they've made makeshift loincloths and whatever.
Right.
They still have to pixelate, and they're out in the elements.
And they're getting scratches on them.
Oh, yeah.
All body parts.
I always feel like, you know, if you come across the wrong bush and it's got...
So to speak.
You know, you...
I'm not even going to get involved.
Wait a minute. Wait. I want to clean this up. You can get titillated by looking at the wrong bush.
It's as common as anything.
I mean, shrubbery.
Yes, of course.
A nice one.
That's so much better.
It is.
A nice shrubbery.
Yeah. That's a nice shrubbery. Yeah.
You got some nice shrubs.
Oh, my God.
Are we in kindergarten ourselves?
Yes, but do you think that Naked and Afraid... Let me try. Do you think that Naked and Afraid is different and naked and dating? Or dating naked? Because the nudity in Naked and Afraid is almost a part of the contest.
It is.
And it's not thrown in there to make it titillating, Gary.
Yeah.
It's done because it's an added aspect to the competition.
Yes, I do think it's different because the point is not the nudity, really. It's just one element of, oh boy, are they going to make it in these
making
elements?
It even tough for 21.
And they have
Robbie,
nothing.
Even if you're right, so what?
Yeah. Exactly.
I concur.
So let me ask you this.
Yes,
if you were forced into a position now where, let's say, you had
Prone or standing?
No, standing. Okay. Someone said, okay, look, you're going back to this job, pitching shows and all that kind of thing.
Yes.
Are there shows that you think would be better than these shows, but are still in that genre?
You know what? I would say that in my list of shows I created and developed, there are a number of things that I think would be viable, watchable, and entertaining. And nothing was edgy enough. Mm-hmm. Nothing had big enough characters that were people that you would never want to hang with,
right?
So, I think that they were not all, you know, but some of the ideas were really good, and people would even say that's a really good idea, but that's not where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And I concur. It's not where we are now. Everything has to be bigger. Look, there's a show called My 600-Pound Life, and
I got a callback.
Wow. Wow. But listen to what this says, really.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What it says is, no, don't be sorry. It's a funny line. what it says is, if I say everything needs to be bigger, The Biggest Loser really wasn't big enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Now
yeah.
we the people that we're talking about in My 600-Pound Life are people with enormous health issues due to their weight, and many of them, most of them, can't get out of bed.
Right.
That's just who I want.
Yeah.
Your father is stuck in bed? Can I have his number?
Yeah.
Because we need him for a show. I mean, really, this is just disgusting
now,
to me.
Now, here's the other thing that's crazy about it. So this is a show.
It's a real show. Yep.
So you can't. It's not a special. It's a series, right?
It's a series as long as they're living.
So they've gone around and found a bunch of 600-pound people?
Well, isn't that something? So there were enough people out there to create the television show.
Well, the 600-pound people didn't find them.
Hey, guess who I bumped into? Well, that's right. I was confined to bed.
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
Guess who I bumped into? 12 people.
That is sad.
It's terrible.
Can I ask you guys about another reality show?
Yeah.
One that my daughter and I watch together, and I have some problem with some level of it, but part of it, I think it's a step above. Have you ever seen, and it's based on a movie, Catfish on MTV?
I have not. I've heard all about it, but I have not seen the show.
No. There is a very, and you know, if you just look at it, there is obviously a lot of setup stuff in it. It is nearly scripted, but they do involve the detective work of trying to find these mysterious internet relationships, and they get to the bottom of it, and that part I like. I like to watch them sort of investigating and getting to the bottom and getting the resolution.
It's almost a
step above, but then I get bothered, and I wonder if I should share it with my kids, because they really are preying on people that oftentimes have mental blocks that they exist and coexist in fake realities online.
Rob, the problem is that I'm a jaded man. And
because you've seen it.
No, not just seen it, but because I know what goes into making that to make sure it's exactly what you're talking about, and it's manipulated and transformed into something that the networks say, now they'll watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just can't go there. Now, I have come up with, you mentioned, you know, do you have shows? What would you do?
Right.
I can tell you, I can make up some shows that I think would sell.
Okay.
I got a couple of titles for you.
Sure.
Things that, you know.
Sure.
Here's a
shows that you would pitch now.
Right.
Oh, surefire.
Can't
miss shows. So, you know, American Idol was the first show that was, you know,
the big singing show.
The big singing show, you know, where you're going to vote people off, and it's going to, and it worked. You know why it worked? It worked because it was the first one.
Right.
I didn't absolutely love it, but I would catch myself watching it eventually, you know, somewhat to see. And then because of that, we had The X Factor. We have America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
We have Uruguay's Got Talent. We have Madagascar. Monaco has talent. But they have two contestants.
Just small.
Yeah.
It's a 10-minute show.
And we have The Voice.
The Voice.
You know,
yes.
So here's a can't miss show.
Okay.
And I would love, I'm gonna take it to the networks, and you're gonna go with me to the pitch meeting.
Okay.
It's called Larynx.
Larynx.
Larynx. Now Larynx is a competition show where you're looking for the absolute worst singer, and the loser has to have his or her larynx removed.
Wow.
You know what? That you know what? That's you joke, but that sounds like something that would get to stage.
It's pretty
two.
Damn
well,
good,
you know,
right?
Yeah. I mean, hey,
I think I'm already at the second pitch meeting.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things people enjoy about these other shows is when the bad singers come up and you laugh and you're like, oh my goodness,
mm-hmm.
It would actually be kind of funny to see a show where we're looking for
the worst singer. Yeah.
William Hung got a record deal.
That's right.
We, Tony and I did something on that once.
And you know, doesn't work, Larynx would also be a great name for a detective show.
It would.
Yeah.
But the way I see this show ending each episode is somebody is strapped onto a gurney and they're being and the show ends with them being wheeled into the operating room screaming. And the host says that'll be the last time they'll be able to scream.
Tell me
that Larynx is not going to be the next biggest show.
Well, it's a hit.
I'm in.
You
I'm
might have to do it in another country because I don't know that they'll allow that.
Oh,
here,
that's true.
How about the biggest sty?
I love that.
The biggest sty.
I love that. Tell me about it. How's the show work?
It would be a show where you're looking for somebody who's got the biggest sty ever, and a sty in their eye.
Right.
It's not just a normal sty. It's got to be a huge sty that would get people to stop and stare at them on the street.
Well, so the sty actually has to be that your eye is completely closed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're voted off.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
we get there, not in the first episode. You have to build.
Yeah, you got
to
work your way up to that. And of course, you see the people who come in and say, I think I have a big sty.
Oh.
Your sty's nothing.
No, and you know what? From week to week, some styes are sneaky. Like, you get no. They are.
The sneaky sty.
Because you think that a sty is really going to erupt, and then it goes away. And on this show, it's a big disappointment because you go home with the home game.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what
but, you're, but you know, you think, oh, this is really, I can see pus. This is really blossoming into something. And the next day, it's like you took antibiotics.
I just like the word sty. I think it's comedic.
I have one. I have one.
Okay.
It's a show called The Stink Eye. And it's not really based on the sty, but we're still. You know what the stink eye is?
What's that?
Well, Tony had to remind me of what the expression meant.
I use the expression.
Yeah. It's people who insult each other until one contestant breaks and he resorts to the knockout game against the other contestants.
Perfect.
What do you think?
Yeah, but I think that might be a half hour show, not an hour.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Well, there could be a problem with the premise here because I haven't given it more than about 3 seconds of thought. But that's how most shows sell now.
That is true.
If it always ends in the knockout game, you don't really have much to look forward to. It's just who's going to get knocked out.
Yeah, there's got to be some other element.
What if it's an elaborate knockout, though?
Well,
like the game Mousetrap.
Okay. You know what? Here's what we're doing. We're actually having a development meeting. What if you think that the result could be for you that you're going to get knocked out, but you get electrocuted?
Uh-huh.
You've got a very cruel streak in your...
No, I know how to pitch TV.
Oh my God.
I know how to pitch television.
This is taking us off the subject, but we'll come back. I was in Virginia Beach in August on vacation.
Right, timeshare?
At the timeshare, of course.
Yes, that's right.
Don't bring up a sore spot. Don't do that.
They have an arcade where you go play games and everything. They have in this arcade the electric chair. Test your ability to withstand.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah,
you sit now. I figure, well, it's not going to shock you, really.
Right?
Yes,
it does. Well, you think it does. It doesn't. So we all did it. I think Connor was not willing to do it, but Rhonda and I did it. My wife, Rhonda, actually was willing to do it. And you hold on. You sit. You're strapped in.
Yes.
You grab these metal bars on the wooden handles of the chair.
Right.
And you put...
Is this at a bordello?
No. I think it was an old bordello, yeah. And they just kept some of the, yes.
Accoutrement.
There was
apparatus.
There was whack-a-mole was there.
Wow. Okay.
That comes right after the biggest sty.
But you hold on to these metal things, and then it proceeds to quote-unquote shock you. Now, what I figured out during the process was it's not shocking you. It's just vibrating very, very rapidly, which has the feeling and the effect.
It tricks you.
It tricks you.
Does everybody leave with a smile and like a cigarette?
I wasn't even going to go there.
No, I promise to always go there.
There were some people who were just, they weren't sitting
in the chair.
They
looked satisfied.
They were sitting on the arms of the chair. So, yeah.
I need another roll of quarters.
But it just reminded me of that. It's a crazy thing to want to sit down and be shocked.
Yeah.
And it supposedly goes up to 2,000 volts. I got up like to 1,700, so I did pretty good.
You did really well.
Wasn't bad.
But, you know, I knew a
something
bunch of...
to fall back on.
That's my tell. This could be a show. The electric chair.
Yeah. Yes.
How many volts can you take?
Right.
This could work.
I think that's great. See, you know what? This was a viable pitch meeting, and now we have a whole bunch of shows we
can take
to the
network. I have
one more
idea that just came to me.
Oh.
Really?
Who's your daddy?
You know, the problem with that is that you'll never come up with the answer. Good show. Good show.
It could be a spinoff of Teen Mom. Or
you know what?
Shows.
You have gotten me reinvigorated into getting back into the game and pitching shows that now I do care about.
See, I'm glad we brought you back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very
thank
good.
You, podcast. Now, thank you very much.
Here's the sad thing. Here's the sad thing. About 6 months from now, I'll be reading my TV guide, and it'll say, hey, coming this summer.
Larynx. I know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not, you weren't able to come up with something so ridiculous
right.
that it couldn't possibly
that's right.
happen.
That's right.
There's no such thing anymore, which is why, again, walk away time.
Yeah.
Walk away
absolutely
time.
Right. We're going to talk a little bit about a movie that I went to see recently.
A new one?
No. An
really?
Old movie,
really?
Yes. Mr. Rob Ford Jr., since you're at the board, let's see. Do you have the theme song to Ghostbusters?
I have it, actually.
Oh, Mr. Rob Spiewak.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot about all this.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the Huey Lewis record yet.
You remember who does this song, Gary?
Almost.
You know what, Rob Spiewak, I never realized it does have a Huey Lewis sound to it.
Oh, there was a lawsuit.
Was it? Oh, that's right.
There was the I Want a New Drug lawsuit.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah, this is Ray Parker Jr.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I forgot that.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot
they settled that. Out of court.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very interesting. Huey Lewis sued. I Want a New Drug. Do you know that? It sounds just like this.
Yes, I do.
Wow. Let me hear it. It's not a...
Everybody knew this song, though.
Yeah, it's not a great song. The movie, okay. We can bring it down now. The movie is out on its 30th anniversary release.
Oh, wow. Makes me feel ancient.
I know. And it's in the theaters. It's in the theaters. I mean, selected theaters.
Right.
It's not like it's running
right.
10 shows
near
a day.
You.
Right, right, right. So I thought, you know what? This is a movie I can take my son to and share, you know, a movie that I grew up with and all that kind of thing. And I remember the Stay Puffed Man and all that kind of thing.
Oh,
so I thought, this is going to be great. It should appeal to him. He's 11 years old.
Right.
Took him to the movie. My wife, Connor, and I, we all went to the movie. And man, doesn't really hold up.
Creaks a little hard in places.
Yes, it does.
That's very interesting because there are some movies from 30, 40 years ago and longer.
Yeah.
They hold up really well. And I'm sure you thought, this movie is hysterical.
Yes.
Did you laugh at the same jokes or were you looking at it like, you know what?
And Rob, have you seen it recently?
I watched it on DVD a few months ago.
Okay.
I've not been to the theater.
Rob Ford,
yeah.
Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, I watched it about a month ago.
Okay. Gary?
You know what? It got by me. And I think I've seen everything. I did not see
you never saw Ghostbusters.
Never saw it. No.
Wow.
No, I don't know how, but it got by me.
Well, you know what? I'm not shocked by that.
Really? You're
a man of good taste. Not that Ghostbusters
you just gave
is
me
not...
a compliment.
Well, I mean, I could see you not really run into the theater to see that.
Dobby just got a compliment.
But it was in 1984. It was the movie of the summer.
Tony Perkins gave me clothes.
It was the movie of the summer.
Yeah, huge.
And my memory was, this is a hysterical movie, but Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, now dearly departed Harold Ramis.
Annie Potts.
Oh,
Ernie
Shavers?
No, Ernie Shavers.
Ernie Hudson.
Ernie Hudson.
Exactly, good pull.
That poor guy.
Poor guy, nothing. He's getting $10 for an autograph. He's at a show every weekend.
Is he really?
Ernie does all those things.
And does he wear the Ghostbusters uniform?
Mm-hmm. He was on Oz all those years. You know,
He
was
on
the show Oz.
Oz. I thought you meant Dr. Oz.
No. I don't think he was ever on him.
Doctor, this week I've got a colon problem. That'd be funny if he just kept coming to get free medical advice.
Right, exactly.
The thing that I think Ghostbusters worked in its day because it was a modernization, and keep in mind this was modern 30 years ago, of basically a Three Stooges or an Abbott and Costello plot.
You're right. You're That's absolutely right. The comedy, there are laughs in Ghostbusters.
Yes.
What I didn't, first of all, it's, and you and I have seen this in when you look back at some older shows, TV shows, comedies, what have you, movies. It's much slower paced than what we're used to now.
Yeah. It's almost a 2-hour movie.
It's a 2-hour movie.
It's a long film.
Which is long.
And it takes its time.
Especially for a comedy. That's right. And it's also, it handles the whole ghost theme fairly seriously. You know, I mean, it's laughs, but New York is really invaded by ghosts and they have to solve it. So it handles that rather serious, not serious in terms of it's a drama.
No.
But the premise is not played for laughs.
The horror effects are genuine. And
genuine.
And you know, and they do creak a little
they
bit.
Creak, they creak a lot. The
but
ghosts flying
I do
around.
Remember the when the dragon from the Temple of Gozer comes jumping out of the high rise and it's a stop motion effect.
Yes.
Which was very,
very
typical in 1984. It really does look like a Christmas special now.
Well,
it's just
not,
you can't really suspend the disbelief for it.
And here's what's so funny. Going back, at the time, it was fine. It was great because it was state of the art
at
that time. When you look at it, it's like, oh my goodness.
But see, now that's true of a lot of things, especially it's true of horror films.
Yes.
Like I remember some of the films that I grew up with, like The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, The Giant Behemoth.
The
Man with Two Heads.
Really, again?
There was a movie that my sister saw a movie and she couldn't sleep for like 2 months. It was called 13 Ghosts. And
William Castle.
It was the first time I think you wore the glasses in the theater and she couldn't sleep. I've seen that movie. It is so tame, so mild. And you know what else is? I'll tell you because you just asked.
I'm taking my nap right now.
I was just afraid someone else was going to speak. I recently saw The Exorcist.
Yeah.
And The Exorcist put some people in the hospital.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I watched it, and it's about as tame as you could get.
Yeah, I don't have to turn away from The Exorcist.
No, but I will say this about The Exorcist. It's still a great movie.
Yes.
It holds your interest. It's great storytelling, but it's not the game
changer. The special effects are dated. That's
the
problem.
That's another thing
about it. But the story is still very good, as you say.
Oh, and it's a well-made film.
And it's you know, as much as we remember the horrific effects and everything, there aren't a lot of those in the movie. The movie is pretty much a straight, dramatic. I don't even think of it as a horror movie, really, because now horror movies are slash a minute. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
You know what? You're gonna turn this into the wrong thing.
I won't.
But sure you will. One of the first things I really enjoyed when I started dating Sarah.
Oh,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Come now.
Talkies?
No.
Whoa. Even you know what? I never want to give him credit for anything, but even I got to give it up to Tony. Do you have a give it up to Tony Perkins sting of some kind?
I thought that was nice.
That was so wonderful.
I'm
and
sorry.
Luckily, you know what? It was a reference to Jolson, and I can just start making fun of never mind. No, Tony, it wasn't. But you're not really far off.
Okay.
And Rob Spiewak will appreciate this, but I'm not going to look at him.
He never does.
No.
It's a sign of disrespect.
I think one of the things that holds up better than trying to find a movie that's 20 or 30 years old to see if it holds up is to go back to the 40s, the 30s, the screwball comedies of the 30s, the film noir like Murder My Sweet of the 40s.
Yeah.
I know I'm
Dial
right
M
up right
murder.
Up Rob Spiewak's alley because he loves these films. Now, my wife was not into old films, so we spent the first few years of dating and being married by me introducing her to Now Voyager.
That's great.
Sorry, Wrong Number.
Rewarding,
you know?
Isn't it? It's great.
I mean, did you do that? Because
Carrie is always. She has sort of a background in old movies, but one of the greatest moments I've had in the last year took my dad and my son, three different Robert W. Spiewaks, and we went and saw The Maltese Falcon in the theater. And you know what? That is short. That's
like
a 90-minute movie and perfect for a kid.
But you're talking about a classic.
Right.
And that's a classic. But there are some movies from that era. If you took somebody to see the original Heaven Can Wait, which was called Here Comes Mr. Jordan,
yes,
which was a phenomenal movie, you know, they really hold
Isn't
up.
Isn't it funny how now, that they do?
And yes, now some don't.
Some
you know,
don't.
You
some
can
don't.
See some old films, but I think that it's truer that more of the old films may be made by some of the greats that created genres, you know, they are fresh. And I just told Rob Spiewak about a movie that he never saw called Holiday, mm-hmm. and I just bought it for him on Amazon.
Oh, wow.
Which you can get by going through the Mike O'Meara Show. And,
oh, yeah.
And it's
well, that one was really loud.
Yeah, we really meant it.
Holiday was written by the same person who wrote The Philadelphia Story.
Ooh, it's
the lesser.
It's a holiday.
No, it's not from that one.
No, that's the Bee Gees.
Oh, okay, that's right. That's
you thought
right.
it was the Beatles.
Yeah, I was standing by.
I did, okay. So I think the whole Ghostbusters thing, it's really interesting, and it's really true about a lot of 60s, 70s, 80s movies. Not so true about the earlier ones.
My son laughed once. He laughed at the Stay Puft guy. And when after the movie, I said, so what do you think? He said, yeah, it's okay. You know, and I understand why he said that.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah.
He did laugh at Stay Puft Man. That was funny. But other than that, no. I still think going back to classics, Casablanca is the perfect movie to me.
It is.
I think it's the perfect movie.
You could take a child of any age to go see The Wizard of Oz, made in the best year of filmmaking, mm-hmm. 1939. Mm-hmm. That movie holds up forever, and it's hard to explain why, but it certainly does, and it always will.
Now, do you think it has anything? I'm sorry, Tony. Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that they were not as concerned of making the movies then to be an absolute representation of their time, but to just sort of tell a story that would play all across the nation? And, you know, they kept it general.
Well, in The Wizard of Oz's case, though, I think it was a combination of incredible storytelling.
Sure.
Incredible casting, mm-hmm. and a movie that was beautifully shot, directed, you know, beautifully, and I think all the right elements came together.
And who knows when that's taking place, you know, because you're in Oz for most of it.
It just happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Casablanca, nobody expected it to be a big hit, especially the writers, the Epstein brothers. Mm-hmm. Nobody really knew what that was going to be, but it is the film by which so many of us...
Yeah. Many people say the greatest American film ever made.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think you know you're about to make the greatest movie. Did Orson Welles know what Citizen Kane was going to be?
Oh, I think he had a very good idea.
Yeah,
I think he was setting
right
out.
Right out of Mercury Radio.
Setting out to revolutionize movies.
And he sure did.
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was his one great movie. I shouldn't say that.
The Magnificent Ambersons was a great movie.
But mm-hmm. it is his most...
Touch of Evil.
Yes, but it is his most complete great movie.
Yes, it is.
All the other ones have some kind of compromise or another in them.
Yeah.
But yes, there were other great ones as well.
He didn't make as many as movies as he should have.
I mean, his career, man, it devolved into schlock stuff.
Oh, and wine commercials.
And wine commercials.
Yeah, and
sad.
And really, telling stories on The Tonight Show.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Anyway. So, speaking of old Hollywood stars.
Yes, sir.
I want to get back to this because I think you said earlier you were going to do this.
Yeah.
We did, was it on the last show where we had your friend Sam on?
Yes.
You introduced a new segment.
Yes, it was called Peculiar and Unique Celebrity Moments.
Yes. Long name for a segment, but it does capture. Ooh, like the music.
Yeah, and I think the segment name is going to get longer every week. Yeah.
I think, how about weird and peculiar and unique and sometimes embarrassing celebrity moments?
That's even better, even better.
Featuring Gary Stein.
Well, look, you know what? I've had many.
Yes.
Because I was originally pursuing an acting career in Hollywood, mm-hmm. and every actor had to find another way to make a living.
Yes.
So I started out by bartending for catering companies. You can take that down now. Thank you so much. you know why? The music is interfering with my speaking.
And now you know what it's like to run board.
I do.
And now you know what it's like to be me. So I am actually, I'm writing a book, by the way.
Are you really?
Yes, I am. Because I remember everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I remember mm-hmm. everything, the good and the bad. And
the ugly.
And the ugly. And there's something very ironic, first of all, about wanting to be an actor. You want to be you don't say, I want to be an architect, a doctor, a lawyer, or an actor. You choose acting for some other reason that is usually not particularly healthy. It is probably you have a need to express yourself. You've got something that wasn't going so well in your life, and you compensated by discovering this about yourself. Mm. It's one of those careers, you know. So you tell yourself that there's something special about what it is that you do. And the irony is that to try to support that, unless you wind up becoming successful very quickly, you're doing jobs you never would have done in a million years. You're doing the most menial jobs because you feel like you're special.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. so you're mm-hmm. you're I don't want to demean any jobs, you know, but maybe you never thought of yourself waiting tables.
Right.
But every actor has had a stint waiting tables unless you were immediately discovered.
So when you're acting, obviously by virtue of acting, you want to be doing something that is going to attract people to you.
That's right.
Come see my show, come see my movie, come see the play, whatever.
Right.
And then you have to do these other jobs where you have to kind of disappear into the
job.
Well,
you said it exactly right. Your job, if you're bartending, catering, waiting tables, if you're doing private parties.
In Hollywood,
your job is to be invisible.
Mm-hmm.
You are a non-entity, and you are not participating in that party. You're not there to speak. You're there to make a beefeater martini with a twist straight up.
Mm-hmm.
You are there to figure out what they need, and also to make it even more special for you, specialer. You know, everybody there who does that job is wearing a bow tie, a white shirt, and black pants.
Mm-hmm. You're all
so.
It's a uniform.
You can tell yourself you're in costume, but actually,
right.
What you really are is you're wearing a uniform for a very menial job with a portable bar that you've helped set up. So very often you would find yourself at celebrities' houses.
Okay.
So I was a constant bartender around the pool at Jane Fonda's house.
Really?
In Santa Monica. Because the catering company, you work for several catering companies. Ultimately, I replaced that with shooting weddings and doing mm-hmm. photography, mm-hmm. which was a very difficult job, but I felt a little bit more, you know, I felt more like I was doing something artistic, even
yeah,
though
valid.
Yeah, you know, but bartending was bartending.
Right.
And if you're an actor, it's very hard to remember to stay invisible.
Mm-hmm.
So I have several stories from Jane Fonda's house.
Let me just say this.
Yeah, go ahead.
For some actors, it probably wasn't difficult to remember to stay invisible. I can imagine it would be for you.
Well, I think you know me pretty damn well. It's very hard not to feel like I want to participate also
mm-hmm. sure.
and be a part of something. So there were several great parties at Jane's house, and I got to know Jane well when she was married to Tom Hayden.
Okay.
Now this would have been, she was a babe back then, right? Still pretty much a babe.
She's
still
yeah.
pretty okay.
Yes, she
yeah.
is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she
well,
is.
We're, okay, so we're talking about the 1980s when Jane was right in the middle. Now, like I said, I was there a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
She was right in the middle of being the queen of the workout videos.
Okay.
Yeah.
She launched that herself.
Yeah.
She decided to do this whole thing, and it exploded.
Yep.
And then a million people followed her. But when I was working at her house, it was the videos.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane looked fantastic.
Sure, sure.
But I wasn't allowed to look. So and Tom Hayden was nice. But I'm lying. So I'm going to tell a story some other time about Jane and Tom.
Okay.
And putting Tom where he needed to be put, actually, at the end of that episode. But this one, I was asked to bartend at a celebration party for the it was just, I think it was the wrap for it. I don't think it was the premiere for the movie Silverado.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, yeah,
so
yeah.
All of the leads of that movie were coming over to Jane's house for a barbecue. So let me tell you who was in the backyard besides me in my costume.
Right?
I'm in the backyard with Kevin Kline, Jeff Goldblum, Brian Dennehy, Scott Glenn, and there were many others.
Wow.
Yeah,
you know,
but the whole
cast.
It's a Hollywood party.
And you know what? I got it. I had just seen Silverado. So the movie had just come out, and she was doing an opening party for her buddies and all of that. And I'm standing at a portable bar at one end of the pool, and they're all sitting not too far away from me, and they're frolicking, and they're coming up to the bar and ordering drinks, and I am starstruck, you know, because I want to be them.
Yeah.
I especially want to be Kevin Kline.
Okay.
Kevin Kline had already made Sophie's Choice,
mm-hmm.
and I just thought he was just an incredible actor,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I always thought Jeff Goldblum was really full of himself. He kind of proved that in the backyard there, and I'm glad that after doing The Fly, he didn't keep that body, you know, that he had, because I hated him.
These are personal vendettas.
Yeah.
Right?
So
tell us the
story. So, you know, in typical Hollywood fashion, these people, a lot of these people like to play games.
Uh-huh.
You know, it wasn't unusual to find people playing charades or something, which I thought was so passé. But somebody, it might have been Jane, but somebody said, hey, guys, I've got a great game. Let's all play. You need to come up with a movie title that's a real movie, and you've got to work an artist's name into the title. What an obscure thing that was for them to think of. But everybody went, wow, okay, let's play that. Okay. So they all start playing the game.
There wasn't real enthusiasm. They were just being polite to Jane, I'm guessing?
No, I don't know.
Or did they think this was a good idea?
Look, at that moment, I was cutting lemons.
Okay.
Because I had run out of some of my garnishes.
Okay. Cutting lemons with Jane Fonda. That's the case.
Cutting lemons.
That's the name of the book.
Exactly. I was very busy. I was cutting lemon and lime peels. I couldn't tell exactly how enthusiastic they were.
And mumbling to himself.
Mumbling to myself. And also the clip-on bow tie kept shifting, so I had to keep putting it back in position. And sure. Look, I had a job to do, guys.
Okay, we understand.
And I was doing my job. So they start playing the game. And some of them have some really funny ones, and I'm standing there going, that's a good one. No, you're not here. No, but I am. I'm here.
Oh, the battle. Oh, in your head.
The internal ego, man. You know, and I feel horrible anyway because I'm bartending.
Right.
I'm in the backyard of people that have huge careers, and I'm cutting lemons and wiping them on the edges of the glasses. You know, and Kevin Kline comes up for a refill. And he comes up to the bar, and it was right when a certain Rodney Dangerfield movie had come out.
Okay.
And so something clicked in my brain, and he comes up and he pushes the glass toward me and he said, how you doing? I said, fine, thank you for feeling like a piece of garbage, which I didn't say.
No.
Right.
But I made him the drink, I did the pouring, I was a good bartender, and I slid the drink toward him and I said, I whispered, Easy Monet.
Ah,
and he said, good. He said, what did you say? I said, Easy Monet.
That's good.
And he said, that is great. So he turns to the party and he says, you're not going to believe what the bartender just said. And Jane is standing across the bar. And if you had a movie camera, so he goes, the bartender just said, Easy Monet. Now, of course, I don't have a name, so I'm not anybody in particular, but I felt like playing, and I shouldn't have. And I look across the pool, and standing on the other side of the pool in her glorious spandex is Jane. And everybody's going, wow, that's a great one. That's a great one. But Jane's not.
No.
Jane's looking at me, and her eyes are a little bit larger than they normally are. And she said, isn't that funny? And I thought, I'm never going to bartend at this house again. Frankly, yikes. I never did.
Wow.
The other Jane Fonda stories that I have are pre-Easy Monet.
Well, it was a great line.
It's a great line.
Listen, I often forgot my place, and my place to be no one was not easy for me to ever play. Mm-hmm. I had an ego. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be well-known.
And I just want to say, when you say I had an ego, you're not saying a big ego. You just have an ego.
We all have an ego. Look, all of us in this
you're
room.
A person.
We wanted to be noticed,
sure, right.
Which is why I think we got into show business.
Right,
we wanted
right,
to be noticed.
Right.
So to be invisible was an amazing challenge, and I have a lot of those stories. I have been asked to leave parties.
Really?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I've asked him to leave a party. Yeah. It had nothing to do with any of this.
Well, I'm not going to tell the story, but I will tell you that one party where I was bawled out by the host was because I dared to say something to one of the guests, and one of the guests was... I expect you to know who I'm talking about, Rob
okay.
Spiewak.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you that one of the guests at the party was Albert S. Ruddy.
A producer, right?
Yes.
The Bond films.
The Godfather.
The Godfather, okay.
Al Ruddy produced The Godfather and many other films. When Al Ruddy walked in, I had a personal family connection to him, and I was told what to do by the host of the party before the party. It was very specific. He gave me very specific rules of how to behave.
And you misbehaved.
Oh boy, did I get nailed for daring to say hello to someone?
Wow!
Wow! Yeah. Just hello. essentially.
I said hello for somebody that we both knew personally very, very well, and I was told afterwards, you know, what did I tell you? What did I tell you? You know, and I wasn't a kid. So I didn't care, and I kind of told this guy off. I said, you are the most pretentious Beverly Hills homeowner I've ever met in my life, and it's my pleasure to never come back to your house again. Wow.
And then what did Steven Spielberg say?
He said... He said, I see you in E.T.
He said, you're never going to work in this town again. You know what? You're going to wind up doing a podcast.
And happy for it.
As soon as they're invented, you're going to do one.
That's right. There was no such thing. You know?
I just have one suggestion.
Yes.
Because I think it will have an impact.
Yes.
If you ever get the chance, you're ever in the company of Jane Fonda again, just lean over and say, Easy Monet.
Yeah, I hope she remembers.
That's a great, great story. That's I look forward to the others.
Oh, no. I look forward to telling you.
We are out of time. I think we got to everything we wanted to get to. We hope you enjoyed the show. Rob Ford, I think you did a pretty good job.
Thank you.
Of the dings were a little louder than usual.
I meant them. Like,
but the dongs were good. The dongs.
We're going to compare dings to dongs.
The dings were too loud, but the dongs were okay, and I think we should leave it at that.
Yeah, we're going to move right along. Thank you, Rob Ford. Rob Zmiwak, thank you as always for being here.
This is great. I didn't have to do anything except talk.
And we thank you all for listening. Remember, you can check us out on TonyPerkinsShow.com, which you've probably done, so there's no point in me saying that. See you next time. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you. See ya.
The Tony Perkins Show, a Moore Broadcasting presentation. This is Dude Walker speaking. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.